Attention, attention, this is History Lost in Time.
And welcome to episode 26 of this podcast. Yes, podcast. That means no pictures, no videos, just audio. And due to the catastrophic copyright situation online, it also means no original snippets from that time. Sorry.
The topic of this episode.
In this episode, I will talk about radio broadcasting in the Third Reich during the war with the focus on other countries. This time, the focus is on German language broadcasts from the Allies USA, Soviet Union and Great Britain. What was there for the Germans to listen to? And remember, they were officially not allowed to listen to this at all.
Political agenda and background.
No agenda from my side.
The sources that were used.
Radio unterm Hakenkreuz, von 1933 bis 45, die Geschichte des Rundfunks in Deutschland. Translation: Radio under the Swastika, from 1933 to 1945, the history of radio broadcasting in Germany, published by Hans Sarkovic, Production Hessischer Rundfunk, 2004. To anyone who wishes to know more, I really recommend this 2-CD box. Rundfunk in Deutschland, herausgegeben von Hans Bausch, Band 2, Ansgar Diller, Rundfunkpolitik im Dritten Reich. Translation: Radio Broadcasting in Germany, published by Hans Bausch, Volume 2 by Ansgar Diller, Radio Broadcasting Politics in the Third Reich, published by Deutscher Taschenbuchverlag, München, 1980. Probably the standard work when it comes to radio broadcasting in this era. Geheime Sender, translation Secret Radio Stations, published by Hans Sarkovic, Production Hessischer Rundfunk und Deutsches Rundfunkarchiv, 2016. To anyone who wishes to know a lot more, I really recommend this 8-CD box. It includes a lot of original audio snippets from this time. So let's take a look at what England, the Soviet Union and the US broadcast. Basically every country at war during World War II had its own international broadcasting service. These were basically mouthpieces of the governments and they had the advantage of effortlessly crossing borders. During peak times in 1943, Germany ran more than 100 directional transmitters for its own international broadcasting service. Content was broadcast in more than 15 languages all over the world. On any day, more than 20 English-speaking programs were broadcast alone. Unlike in pre-war times, where the target audience was Germans abroad, the new target audience now was foreign people, with the goal of influencing public opinion. Morale and the will to fight were supposed to be weakened, thereby influencing the war in a positive way for Germany. The Allied radio stations basically had the same goal, however they worked differently. Let's start with the Soviets. The official Soviet International Broadcasting Service was Radio Moscow. As mentioned in previous episodes, German language content was broadcast since the late 1920s. After the collapse of the Weimar Republic, tensions between Germany and the Soviet Union rose dramatically, especially during the Spanish Civil War, where Germany and the Soviet Union were facing each other as enemies. With the help of communist networks in Germany and German emigrants within the Soviet Union, Radio Moscow was able to broadcast up-to-date information as well as news reports that were embarrassing to the Nazis. In 1937, the Germans began to broadcast a radio program for the German population that tried to counter the Soviet propaganda. It was called "This is Soviet Russia Speaking," and it was supposed to show what the real Soviet Union was like. However, the program was too primitive and too shallow to have any real effect. Reports from visitors to the Soviet Union or from former communists that had converted to National Socialism were much more effective. And yes, people like this really existed. When the German-Soviet Non-Aggression Pact was signed in late August 1939, the hostile programming ended in both the German and the Soviet radio services. This was a difficult time for German emigrants within the Soviet Union. 1,200 of them were extradited to Germany. Radio Moscow now considered the Western capitalist countries to be the main enemy and rearranged its content accordingly. the Soviet annexations in Northern and Eastern Europe, for example in Finland, the Baltics and Eastern Poland, were simply glossed over. After the German invasion in late June 1941, this changed dramatically, of course. The Soviet radio stations held back with communist propaganda and mostly focused on frontline reporting. However, the truth was handled in a rather relaxed fashion. When it seemed useful, lies were broadcast, or reality was at least heavily distorted. As the German population was very curious about the Soviet view on things, these messages were heard. However, the Germans had to find out for themselves what was true and what wasn't. Until the end of the war, the Soviet radio stations followed the general motto, "The Hitlers come and go, but the German people and the German state stay," which was based on something Stalin had said. However, when the war was about to end, the Soviets switched to the motto of collective guilt, which can be interpreted as a propaganda preparation for the expulsion of the Germans from the East that took place later. There was no longer a differentiation between Nazis and normal Germans. During the war, Radio Moscow constantly increased its volume of German content. In 1939, the radio station broadcast about 35 hours of German language content in a week. By the end of the war, this had increased to 17 German programs a day and 76 hours per week. The focus was on news, but there was also music and programs targeting specific social groups, like workers, farmers, soldiers, and young people. The broadcasts were controlled by the Soviet intelligence service. During the first months of the war, things were a bit chaotic, but once the German attacks had slowed down and the first counteroffensive during the winter of 41-42 had been successful, control became much stricter. German and Austrian communists supported the Soviets and in some cases even held leadership positions, for example Walter Ulbricht and Wilhelm Pieck, who would later rise to the highest ranks within communist East Germany. In 1942-43, Stalingrad was of course a big topic for Radio Moscow. The worse the situation became for the Wehrmacht, the more Radio Moscow could enjoy broadcasting victory messages. In February of 1943, the radio station broadcast the first reports from the recaptured city. German listeners were most interested in programs involving prisoners of war. Within these programs, greetings from POWs were sent to Germany and captured letters from German soldiers were read out loud. The secret service of the SS, the SD, mentioned in his reports from the Reich that one of the main reasons to listen to Radio Moscow were these POW programs. It is important to know that the German government claimed that there were no German POWs in the Soviet Union and that instead all captured German soldiers were shot immediately. Letters that were sent via the International Red Cross were not delivered to German families but rather held back. This was supposed to strengthen the will to resist as well as to dehumanize the enemy. But it also meant that information could only be obtained through Radio Moscow. And the more it became known that there actually were living German POWs in the Soviet Union, the more Radio Moscow gained credibility and the more German radio services lost theirs. However, the Soviets didn't just rely on Radio Moscow alone. They also created services for other countries, for instance, a Czech language service. On top of that, radio stations organized by communist emigrants were set up. Among them were the German People's Radio Station, led by the Central Committee of German Communists, the Austria radio station led by the Communist Party of Austria, and there was a Freedom radio station for the Sudetenland Germans, just to mention a few. There were a lot more. There was no lack of enthusiastic communists with a background in journalism within the Soviet Union. The Soviets were still in control of these radio stations and did censor them. However, the German and Austrian communists censored themselves, so there wasn't that much to do for the Soviets. Just like Radio Moscow, these radio stations had full access to the information of the Red Army, the intelligence services, and POW camps. The German People's Radio Station initially claimed to broadcast from Germany. However, already in 1942, it opened up with the truth and explained where it was located and who it was run by. The station was active from September 1941 to May 15, 1945. A lot of people who would later achieve high ranks within communist East Germany were active within this station, among them the already mentioned Walter Ulbricht and Wilhelm Pieck, but also Anton Ackermann and Markus Wolf. For a time, the station used less communist and more German national arguments in order to reach anti-communists as well. The Sudeten German Freedom Station tried to use a regional approach. However, this radio station was met with criticism and resistance initially. Especially members of the German Communist Party were opposed, since they didn't want to suggest that there would be an independent or autonomous German Sudetenland after the war. The radio station used shortwave as a medium. However, as there were many shortwave-capable radio devices within former Czechoslovakia, this wasn't that big of a problem. This was one of the reasons why the Germans ordered the removal of the shortwave components in 1943, in case you remember. With the help of captured letters, newspapers, and interrogation results from POWs from the Sudetenland, the radio station was able to maintain its regional touch. However, the call to rise up against Hitler had no effect. When it became obvious that the war would end with a Soviet victory, the propaganda changed in order to prepare the ground for the expulsion of the Germans. The radio station said that the Germans could only remain within the Sudetenland if the entire people would rise up as one against Hitler. The Soviets knew that this was unrealistic. But by that, they could use propaganda to set the stage for what was already planned. The radio station had its listeners and had some effect on local resistance groups. The National Committee for a Free Germany, which consisted of POWs, also got its own radio station. This committee had a crushing effect on the Nazi leadership, as many high-ranking officers like Field Marshal Paulus and several dozen generals joined it. However, the effect on the German population was limited. The radio station used German national arguments and called upon the Germans to openly rebel against Hitler and to either surrender or switch sides. As usual, there were reports with POWs and news from the front lines. The National Committee made statements that talked about a free and self-determined future for Germany. However, from Stalin's point of view, the committee was only a means to an end, which is why these statements were unrealistic from the start. One special Soviet weapon in the radio war were the ghost voices. A Soviet radio station would set itself up on the frequency of a German radio station. While the Germans would read their news and reports, a Soviet commentator would shout comments and slogans while the German radio announcers made a pause. This required quick-witted, very reliable, quick-thinking, and well-informed radio announcers. It was impossible to jam these broadcasts, as the Germans would have jammed their own frequencies then. There wasn't much the Germans could do against these ghost voices, and according to the SD reports, they caused quite some confusion and worry among the German listeners. On April 13, 1945, Walter Ulbricht returned to Berlin with a group of German communists to set up new state structures. This would eventually lead to the creation of Communist East Germany. Already on May 13th, the new East German radio services started broadcasting their program on medium wave. More about that in future episodes. Let's switch our view towards the West, and let's start with the United States of America. In contrast to Germany and the Soviet Union, there were no state-owned radio services here. The radio landscape was fully privatized. As long as the US were neutral, meaning until early December 1941, there were so-called German hours at some US radio stations, which were aimed at Germans within the US. Basically, everyone could book time among US stations. That included Nazi groups within the US. When the US entered the war, this changed. From autumn 42 to spring 43, there were so-called German-American loyalty hours at the US radio stations called We Fight Back. These programs were supposed to show that German emigrants within the US shared the same war goals as the US government. The US government founded the international radio station Voice of America. German immigrants were helping everywhere, and they provided the radio stations with content and interviews, among them Thomas Mann and Albert Einstein. When the US became a part of this war, it also founded the Office of War Information, OWI, which acted like a Ministry of Information. The radio stations were monitored and provided with official government content. During peak times, about 10,000 people worked at the OWI. 3,000 of them were busy with managing radio broadcasts. German language content of NBC and CBS was broadcast to Germany via shortwave. The official radio station Voice of America started broadcasting on February 1, 1942, and got its own set of about 40 shortwave transmitters that were aimed at Europe until the end of the year. Before that, the station had to use the transmitters of the private radio stations. The effect of these transmissions was limited, though, as there were not a lot of Germans that owned radio devices with shortwave capability. The British and Soviet radio stations that used strong medium wave and long wave transmitters had the advantage here. Interviews conducted among German POWs revealed that only about 10% of them had heard the US transmissions more or less regularly. Just like their British and Soviet counterparts, US radio stations broadcast POW reports. However, they also reported about German crimes, like the Holocaust or the Lidice massacre that happened in the Czech Republic. When the Allied armies approached Germany and started occupying German territory, they set up radio stations for the future Allied military government. These were using medium wave and long wave transmitters, meaning they were heard by a lot more people than the shortwave transmissions from the US. These radio stations started broadcasting orders from the military government, for instance, the order to stop the scorched earth measures the Nazi government had set in motion. The US forces stated that after the war, the Germans would have to provide for themselves and that they couldn't rely on support shipments, so they would only harm themselves by destroying everything. When the Reich radio station Luxembourg was captured in an almost undamaged state by US forces in autumn 1944, it was quickly used by the Allies for their own purposes. It started broadcasting so-called white propaganda, which means it openly said where it was based, what it was, and who it was run by. The goal was to portray the US armed forces in a positive light and to counter the atrocity propaganda of Goebbels. There were also special reports from occupied German territory and about German POWs. The station tried to create unrest between the Wehrmacht on the one side and the SS and the Nazi Party on the other side by claiming that the latter ones were trying to hide behind the front lines. The station was run by an Austrian emigrant, and its highest principle was to always stick to the truth even if it was inconvenient. This was achieved, even during the Battle of the Bulge. Due to that battle, the station had to temporarily shut down from December 19th to 23rd, 1944. The Luxembourg station brought special reports when there were major military developments. For example, when US and Soviet forces met at the Elbe in late April 1945, and when General Jodl signed the unconditional surrender on May 7th, 1945. In parallel to the Luxembourg radio station, the US forces also set up the black propaganda radio station 1212. It claimed to be an official Wehrmacht radio station based at the Rhine. The goal was to help the US forces cross the Rhine, so the station had a clear military goal. In order to achieve this, the station always told the truth in order to get the German listeners used to it being trustworthy. During the Battle of the Remagen Bridge, the station distributed false information in order to create chaos and confusion among the Germans. However, it is very difficult to measure how much of an effect this had. As the station only broadcast content for a couple of hours a day and could only be heard in Western Germany, it wasn't that well known. Now let's talk about the British radio broadcasts. The radio services in Britain were not state-run like in Germany or the Soviet Union, but they were also not privatized like in the US. Instead, they had a public law structure, just like the main German radio stations have today. For instance, the NDR in the north, the WDR in the west, the SWR in the southwest, the BR in Bavaria, the HR in Hesse, the RBB in Berlin-Brandenburg, the SR in the Saar region, and Radio Bremen, and hopefully I didn't miss one. In Britain, the BBC had a monopoly on radio transmissions. During the Sudetenland crisis in autumn 1938, the first German language broadcasts were set up within the German service. The highest principle was never tell a lie, even though polemics in comments, exaggerations, and skipping some news was fairly common. The news were also not told objectively, but from a subjective perspective. There was censorship, but not a state-run propaganda machine, even though the British military would have preferred that. However, from August 1941 onward, the Political Warfare Executive, a group consisting of the Ministries of Foreign Affairs, Information and War Economy, managed the British international broadcasters together. Right from the start, the BBC tried to discuss internal political German topics, among them difficult topics like everyday denunciations and the Nazi euthanasia program. The German service of the BBC was the most heard foreign radio service in Germany. It also had a very good reputation as being honest. According to the SD reports, the German population was of the opinion that you had to listen to the BBC if you wanted to know what was really going on. These reports were from 1941 and demonstrate how quickly the German radio services had lost their credibility. And this only got worse as the BBC kept being right and the German radio services simply didn't talk about some topics at all. The BBC didn't just provide the Germans with information, but also distributed practical tips, like how to easily modify Volksempfänger and Kleinempfänger radios to allow them to receive shortwave transmissions. By traveling to Sweden, BBC employees also found ways to overcome German jamming. Here it is important to realize that jamming was very complex and expensive. In order to jam a certain frequency effectively within an area, about 100 jammers were required. However, the BBC determined that even a jam transmission could be heard if the radio announcers spoke clearly and slowly, and if the broadcasts were short in order to prevent listeners from tiring out. That's the reason why you hear radio announcers in audio snippets from that time speaking noticeably slow and overemphasized. Before the outbreak of the war, German immigrants were the main driving force behind German language radio broadcasts from other countries. When war broke out, they were employed in executive roles like radio announcers, authors, and translators. However, neither in the US nor in Britain, Germans held any leadership positions anymore. Their efforts paid off though, as they were able to fine-tune the texts to the German mentality. Their voices also reminded the Germans that the other, the old Germany, still existed somewhere out there. Just like the Soviets and the Americans, the British also produced POW reports. Starting in autumn 1944, there was even a radio show produced and organized by German POWs, which was listened to a lot in Germany. However, there were also reports about critical topics like the persecution of the Jews, forced labor, and the Holocaust. Details like transporting people in cattle wagons, ghettos, and gassing was mentioned. The BBC used audio snippets from older Nazi speeches where the Nazis spoke against the Jews and threatened them to give these reports further credibility. In spring 1945, Anita Lasker, a German Jew who was just liberated from the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp, spoke on BBC radio and talked about the conditions within the camps. However, due to the widespread collapse of the infrastructure in Germany, this was probably only heard by very few people. Next to the serious programs, there were also satirical programs, for example Hitler vs. Hitler, in which public Hitler statements that contradicted each other were played directly one after the other. A good example for this were Hitler's statements about Russia, which changed drastically a couple of times over the years. Another dark humor program was Telegrams to Nazi Leaders, in which personal weaknesses of leading Nazis were discussed. For instance, the alcohol abuse of Robert Ley, leader of the German Labour Front. A variant of the popular song Lili Marlene, which was sung by Lucy Mannheim, can be called musical satire. This song can be easily found on YouTube and is both tragic and bitterly evil. Some text examples, and keep in mind in German this rhymes, perhaps you will fall in Russia, perhaps in Africa, but you will fall somewhere. That's what your Führer wants. The Führer is a flayer. We can see that clearly here. He turns children into orphans, every woman into a widow. And whoever is responsible for everything, I want to see hanged on the lamppost. Hang him on the lamppost. Your Lili Marlene. The broadcast of the German service of the BBC started with drum beats. They played the Morse code for the letter V for victory, so bam 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 bam. The BBC never allowed any doubt that England was willing to fight this war to the bitter end, no matter how successful Germany was in 1939 and 40. The BBC didn't hold back with details regarding the devastating effects of the German bombings of English cities in 1940. Over the course of the war, this was used to justify British bombings of German cities. The motto was, "The Germans have started this, so it's their own fault." This was then underlined by playing parts of Hitler's speeches, where he announced the annihilation of British cities. Obviously, this was something where the majority of German listeners did not agree with the BBC. The British also had their own black propaganda radio stations. Among the more popular ones is Gustav Siegfried I, which was on air from May 1941 to autumn 1943. It gave the appearance of being the station of a secret organization working in Germany that consisted of anti-communists that were disappointed with Hitler. The station played jazz music and scolded the Nazi bigwigs that were living luxurious lives during the war. The very colorful and rude language was very similar to the kind of talk common among old conservative German national circles from Imperial Germany, and was supposed to attract people with exactly that background. About half of all POWs that were interviewed knew about Gustav Siegfried I. It is considered as the best known black propaganda radio station of the Allies of World War II. Obviously, the Soviets listened to the British broadcasts as well, and they were very impressed with Gustav Siegfried I. They set up a similar station, which claimed to be operated by an opposition group within the SR. It was called Radio Station of the SR Fronde. It tried to increase existing irritation and frustration among the German population, and to attack both the SS and the Nazi Party. The political agenda slowly switched from left-wing National Socialism to communism, and by the end of the war, the station openly called upon the Germans to sabotage the German war machine. As usual, sources for information were intelligence services, captured letters, and interviews of POWs. Other British black propaganda radio stations were the following four. 1. SS radio station Hagedorn, which claimed to be run by an opposition group within the SS. 2. Wehrmacht radio station North, which specifically targeted Wehrmacht soldiers in Norway and which tried to cause problems between the Wehrmacht on the one side and the SS and the Nazi Party on the other side. 3. Soldiers radio station Calais, respectively Soldiers radio station West, which was launched as a replacement for Gustav Siegfried I and which specifically targeted soldiers of the army and the Luftwaffe. 4. The German shortwave radio station Atlantic, which targeted soldiers of the Navy. The station broadcast a mix of true and false reports and sometimes also broadcast live programs of the German Greater Broadcasting in order to support its claim of being a genuine German radio station. Until the very end, many soldiers didn't know if this was a German radio station or one operated by the Allies. The station got well known quite quickly and created a loyal base of listeners by broadcasting modern dance music. The black propaganda radio stations used strong medium-wave transmitters which allowed quick frequency changes in order to avoid German jamming. Sometimes they even used German frequencies when German radio stations had to be shut down due to air attacks. By the end of the war, the black propaganda radio stations were increasingly heard by the Germans since they provided very accurate frontline information. The British had a feeling that Germans realized that they were listening to British radio stations, but the facade was kept intact. With the help of these radio stations, the Allies gave the appearance of knowing everything, which led to POWs talking much quicker in interviews. They had the feeling that they were only confirming stuff the Allies already knew, and not that they were revealing anything new. It was one of these radio stations that was the first to talk about the offer to surrender, which Reichsführer SS Heinrich Himmler had sent to the Western Allies via the Swedish envoy Bernadotte. This led to Hitler's order to relieve Himmler of all duty, which didn't have much of an effect though. On May 1st, 1945, all black propaganda stations of the British were shut down.
A few finishing words.
The question that remains is this one. How effective were these international broadcasts? The most popular ones were the US radio station in Luxembourg, the German service of the BBC, and Radio Moscow. They were listened to by large parts of the German population, and they had some effect. Because of them, the credibility of the German services eroded much faster, and they established a kind of one-way communication between the Allies and the German population. Nobody could or wanted to do without this propaganda weapon. However, these radio stations also didn't have any major success. The war was decided by military force, not propaganda or psychological warfare. Radio broadcasts played their part, but nothing more. Just like with every new weapon, there were unrealistic expectations initially. Since World War II, propaganda within the media has played an important role in every conflict, but one cannot rely on propaganda to decide the conflict on its own. In a way, war in the media is like arm wrestling. Even when you are strong, your enemy will push against you and make your life difficult. Only when one side gives up, the other side can win easily. And usually, the media war ends when the war has already been decided militarily. Remember, the German radio services only shut down on May 13, 1945, 4 days after the surrender.
Thank you. This was History Lost in Time.